right.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. All right. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for coming this morning. I know that there were other options, other classes that you could have taken. There were probably other things that you could have done this morning, but you decided to come to this class. And so I want to make this a very content-rich, very educational program for you. And this is my favorite, by far, my favorite class to teach on self-directed IRAs and in the self-directed IRA industry. I teach a number of different classes, from rules and regulations, the common pitfalls that were mentioned, but this by far is my favorite class because it allows me to show people how they can take a small amount of money in a Roth IRA or a health savings account or even a Coverdell education savings account and make a meaningful profit and, as was mentioned, most importantly, not pay any taxes. I've been doing this for 15 years in the self-directed IRA industry. I have never seen anyone go to jail, by the way. So just wanted to make sure I clear up that item there. I have also not been to jail, fortunately. Thank you, Marvin. I appreciate that. So this is the three practical ways to grow your small balance IRA. So what are these three practical ways? I'm going to ask everybody to take a lot of notes over the next 90 minutes. There's going to be a lot of content, a lot of information, a lot of education. And I'm also at the very end going to make sure that I give everyone a special gift, which is our transaction manual. Okay? And so make sure you stick around to the very end. I'm going to share with you how you get a copy of this manual, which has the sample documents that pertain to the three transactions that I'm going to be talking about. All right, so number one is partnering and joint ventures. Partnering and joint ventures. You want to write that down. So what you're going to learn about is how you can partner your IRA money with a spouse's IRA, or your IRA funds with your non-IRA funds. I'm going to share with you a buy, renovate, and sell rental property transaction where I partnered my Roth, my traditional, and my non-IRA funds. Now, usually when I say this at the very beginning, someone is usually thinking or will blurt out loud, John, you can't do that, it's illegal, and you're going to go to jail for that. Who's heard that before? Okay. You can partner with your non-IRA money. You can partner with other family members' IRAs, but you have to make sure you structure the transaction properly. And that's what we're going to be sharing with you in today's program. We'll talk about the pitfalls, and we'll talk about how you can do this in a compliant manner. Additionally, we're going to talk about a joint venture with a non-related party. Or in the IRA world, we call these non-disqualified persons. So, for example, what's your name again, sir? Andy.
Ed.
What is it?
Ed.
Ed, sorry. So, Ed and I are not disqualified persons to one another. Okay? So, Ed and I can put a real estate transaction together where my IRA partners with Ed's IRA funds or non-IRA funds, and we can go out and, let's say, flip a property, and I could take a larger percentage of the profits. Or maybe Ed is the one that found the investment, and so Ed uses his Roth IRA with maybe only $2,000 or $3,000 in the deal. He leverages my IRA money, and he takes a lion's share of the profits. We're going to go into detail and show you a real live case study of how this works in this program. All right, so partnering and joint ventures. This is a very, very powerful way to grow a small dollar IRA. All right, number two is partnering on private money lending. Are there any private money lenders out there? Anybody doing private money lending? Okay, great. For those of you that aren't, we're going to share with you, if you're interested, how you can get involved in private money lending. How you can partner your IRA money with your non-IRA funds on a private money loan, or your IRA funds with a spouse's IRA, your IRA funds maybe with another investor's IRA funds. You could also potentially look at wrap mortgages. And then in this session, I'm going to share with you what's called an equity participation loan. Has anyone heard of an equity participation loan? Okay, this is the, I'll say, single most powerful private money lending technique with a self-directed IRA. And I'm going to share with you specific case studies where not only are you drawing an interest rate, which is tax-free in your accounts, but you're also getting an equity percentage of the profits. It's called an equity participation loan. And Peter Fortunato was mentioned before. I learned this when I went to a Peter Fortunato and Dykes Botiford conference. Does anyone know Peter Fortunato, Dykes Botiford? They were on the front of the manual. All right, I would encourage you to check out those two gentlemen. They do some phenomenal seminars on private money lending, and they talk a lot about self-directed IRAs. IRAs came about in 1974 under the Employee Retirement Income Securities Act, and Peter and Dykes were doing self-directed IRA deals in 1978, just 4 years later. So I have a tremendous amount of respect for those two individuals, and I'd encourage you to attend those sessions later today. So partnering on private money loans. And last but not least, we're going to talk about the IRA or Coverdell Education Savings Account, or HSA, or solo 401k, whatever type of account you might be utilizing, borrowing money via a non-recourse loan. So what you're going to learn is that with IRAs, you can't go out to Bank of America, or Wells Fargo, or Chase Bank and get a mortgage. All right? It doesn't work. The reason why is because the Bank of America's of the world, the Chase's, the Wells Fargo's, when you borrow money, what do you have to sign? A personal guarantee. Ed said it, a personal guarantee. Well, unfortunately, under 4975C1C of the tax code, you personally guaranteeing debt that your IRA takes on is considered a prohibited transaction. So you have to structure these transactions properly. You have to find lenders that will loan on a non-recourse basis or buy properties on seller financing. And I'll share with you examples of that. Okay? So I apologize if I lost anybody on mentioning 4975 of the tax code. I do have a tendency sometimes to bore people with that type of language. If I tell a very dry joke at any time, no, that's because I spend a lot of my time there. So just laugh at me if I tell a dry joke over the next 90 minutes. You guys with me on that? Okay. Again, I don't have many jokes. Alrighty, so now what I want you to do, the framework for this class, three pillars. I want you to write down these three pillars. Pillar number one is tax-advantaged self-directed accounts. That's pillar number one. Pillar number two, they're having a lot of fun over there, aren't they? We're talking about taxes and self-directed IRAs. Is everybody still okay with that? Or is anyone? Okay. All right, so number two is income generating and appreciating real estate. Income generating and appreciating real estate. And the last pillar is wealth preservation. Wealth preservation. Tax-advantaged self-directed accounts, income generating, appreciating real estate, and wealth preservation. Now, the self-directed IRA, the self-directed Roth IRA, the self-directed HSA, the self-directed Coverdell Education Savings Account, these are accounts, these are vehicles. You can put money into these accounts, either tax-deferred or tax-free, we'll talk about that. And then you can grow these accounts tax-deferred or tax-free. The real power behind these self-directed investment accounts is not the accounts in them themselves. It's what you do with the money in the accounts. The reality is if you open a self-directed IRA or Roth IRA or Coverdell Education Savings Account or Health Savings Account, you put money in the account and you don't do anything with it, what's going to happen over time? It's going to disappear. Erosion, inflation, right? Fees. We don't want that to happen. 15 years ago, when I started in the self-directed IRA business, that was the biggest problem that I observed. There were all these folks out there that would open self-directed IRAs because of the power behind these self-directed accounts, but then they wouldn't do anything with the money. And so I made sure that we could make a change with that. And we started creating content and education around how people are actually utilizing these small balance IRAs. That's what this presentation is all about. So I want you to think of this orbit in terms of the different types of self-directed tax advantage investment accounts. So everybody's orbit here is going to look a little bit different. And I'd encourage you to draw this map out. Okay? And the planets represent different account types. There are actually 7 self-directed tax advantage investment accounts that you could potentially open and fund. Now, not everybody is going to open 7 self-directed tax advantage investment accounts. Some people's orbits are one account to get started. Maybe you have an IRA, 401k, thrift savings plan, 403b, deferred compensation plan, pension. Maybe you have an existing retirement plan now, and you simply want to get it out of the stock market and put it into real estate. That's an easy process. We just simply move your planet from one financial institution to the equity trust financial institution. And for those of you that are brand new to self-directed IRAs, it is important to understand that your current financial institution most likely is not going to allow you to self-direct into real estate. The closest you're probably going to get to self-direct into real estate is a publicly traded real estate investment trust. Who here is interested in investing in a publicly traded real estate investment trust? Okay, there's a couple then, that's okay. All right, but most of the folks that I work with, they want to invest in non-correlated assets. They want to own single-family residential rentals. They want to do a fix-and-flip transaction. They want to do a wholesale type investment. They want to do a private money loan. They want to do an equity participation loan. They want to get more creative than the publicly traded REIT. So that's where Equity Trust as a specialized custodian would come into play to be the custodian for you so that you could deploy your capital into the real estate investments that you deem as a best fit for your portfolio. Now, what does my orbit look like? I'll pause for a moment. My orbit looks like this. I have a traditional IRA. I have a Roth IRA. My wife has a traditional and Roth IRA, and then we have a health savings account. So we have 5 planets in our orbit. And every single year, we do what with those accounts? We contribute to those accounts every single year. We max out our contributions. And I'm going to share with you in just a moment how much you can put into these accounts from a contribution perspective. But it's not just the planets and the contributions. We also are actively growing the accounts. We are investing in real estate, rental properties, private money loans, equity participation loans, the transactions that I'm going to be sharing with you today. And then last but not least, we have this wealth preservation. Wealth preservation is taking our orbit and leaving it to our children, grandchildren, or other generations to come. Let me give you an example. Kevin and Cynthia, 2 clients that I started working with in 2010, they had old 401ks that were invested in the stock market. They were stock market refugees back in 2010. After the Great Recession, they recovered some of their losses. They rolled their monies over. They converted those monies into a Roth IRA. We'll talk about that. They went from tax deferred to tax free Roth. They got the taxes out of the way on the seed so they don't have to pay it on the crop, is the analogy we use. And then they began investing in real estate. They have done over 20 real estate transactions. They buy properties and sell on owner financing. They buy real estate, renovate, and sell on lease option to purchase. And they also have just traditional buy and hold rentals. They've done over 20 transactions, and they still have 14 cash-flowing properties in their self-directed Roth IRAs. They grew their self-directed Roth IRAs from about $200,000 in 2010 to over $1 million in properties and $130,000 in net annual tax-free cash flow. There's no debt on the properties. They own the properties free and clear. They have $130,000 coming into their Roth IRAs, and they pay 0% tax. If they sell those properties, there's no recapture depreciation, no long-term capital gains tax. It's all tax-free in their Roth IRAs. Kevin and Cynthia are over the age of 59 and a half, right down the age 59 and a half. It's the qualified retirement age in the United States. What that means is you can start taking money out of the account to use it for personal use. If you're under 59 and a half, the idea is keep the money in there, keep it growing, keep it investing. All of that is okay. But when you want to use it for personal use, so when you want to buy the vacation rental on the beach, when you want to use it to buy a new boat or a new car, or you want to use it for healthcare. So when you're using it for personal use, you have to wait till you're 59 and a half or older. Otherwise, you're going to have a 10% penalty and taxes. So for Kevin and Cynthia, they're over 59 and a half. They can begin harvesting. Every year, they have $130,000 coming in, never hits their 1040 as ordinary income. They can take a tax-free distribution every single year, 0% tax. But they don't want to keep the money. What do you think they want to do with that money? What do you think they want to do with the properties and the cash flow?
Give it to their kids.
They want to give it to their kids. Their kids don't have kids of their own yet. But if their children have children, then what do you think they want to do with the Roth accounts?
Give it to their
grandkids. Tax-free legacy. The Roth IRA is one of the most powerful retirement savings vehicles that I know of, not only from a retirement planning perspective for you, but also from a legacy planning perspective, an estate planning perspective. So they can leave those Roth IRAs with those properties in there to their grandchildren or their children if their grandchildren don't have children, and they pay 0% tax. Here's another thing to write down. IRAs avoid probate. IRAs avoid probate. This is incredibly powerful. What I have learned over the last 15 years is when the going gets tough for people, they immediately try to raid their self-directed IRAs. You can ask May, who's in the back here. She takes hundreds of calls a week from people that say, oh, I have this IRA or 401k. I'm trying to figure out how to access it to pay bills. I'm trying to figure out how to access it to pay off my mortgage. I'm trying to figure out how to access it to pay down the debt on a rental property I have. Why in the world would you take money out of a tax-sheltered IRA? It's absolute insanity. And the problem is the legislative efforts actually perpetuate a lot of this. So I'm saying this with a lot of passion so that you really cherish these self-directed IRA dollars. And anybody that you know in your family circle or your loved ones, if they're thinking about taking money out of their IRA, stop them from doing it. It's a massive problem in this country, and it's only going to get worse and worse for generations to come. There's a massive underappreciation for these self-directed accounts. Massive underappreciation. These are powerful vehicles from a creditor protection standpoint. So like I tell people, beg, borrow, steal, do everything you have to do, but don't take money out of your IRA. The reality is if I file bankruptcy, they can't come after my IRA. They can't come after my 401k. So why in the world would I try to access money from that IRA to use it for non-investment purposes? All right, let me pause there on that quick, call it stump speech. All right, I just wanted to make sure we understand that. Are you guys with me on that? The appreciation for IRAs? Okay. So think about your orbit as we move throughout, what that orbit is going to look like for you. All right, compounding interest in the absence of taxation. Why am I so passionate about this? Why are investors so passionate about this? And this is going to help you understand the difference between a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA. So you hear me say this quite a bit, compounding interest in the absence of taxation. Compounding interest in the absence of taxation. Just think of a snowball rolling down the mountain, and it's picking up snow, right? Now, in a non-IRA environment, in a taxable environment, you have the sun that's beating down on that snowball, so every single year, a percentage of that snow is being eroded away, right? Being melted away. That's taxation. Metaphorically, the sun is the IRS. What we do with this self-directed account is we create a shield between the sun and the snowball. So every single year, as we generate profit, that profit then enables us to generate more profit in future years. And you'll see those examples when we jump into the case studies. All right, so here's how it works. We're going to apply to our time value money calculator $6,000. $6,000 going in every year for 25 years. And we're going to apply a 12% return on investment, a contribution tax during the years of contributions, a tax of 30%. And then when we distribute all the money, we're going to apply a 20% tax rate. So in a taxable environment, If we apply our numbers and our 12% return, we have $601,000 saved. So remember, every single year as that snowball is picking up snow, a percentage of that is melting away. Then we move over to a traditional IRA, tax-deferred account. A tax-deferred account is where when we put money in, we get a tax deduction, it grows tax-deferred, and then when we take the money out after 59 and a half, we have to pay taxes. And that's going to be based on our ordinary income tax rate. So if we take $100,000 out from our million-dollar traditional IRA at 59 and a half, that $100,000 is added to our ordinary income, and then we pay taxes based on our effective tax rate. So if we're at a 20% tax rate, 20% of $100,000 is $20,000. We take $100,000, we write a check to the IRS for $20,000, and we keep $80,000. That's tax-deferred growth. Using our example, in a traditional IRA, we have $894,000 saved. So if we compare our traditional IRA to our taxable environment, that's nearly $300,000 in tax savings. Now, I know that there's going to be some naysayers in the room that say, well, wait a second, John, what about all the tax deductions that I'm getting and calculating those tax deductions going forward? We can look at those different types of models. The idea of this graph is just displaying to you the difference between taxable versus traditional versus Roth IRA. Okay, so just bear with me as we go throughout. So we have the Roth IRA now. The Roth IRA is seeded with after-tax dollars. After-tax dollars. So we don't get a deduction for it. You hear us use the analogy a lot. You either pay taxes on the seed or you pay taxes on the crop. So with a Roth IRA, the money goes in after tax. Applying our 12% compounding return in our taxes, we have $1.117 million saved in a Roth IRA. So if we compare our Roth IRA to our traditional environment, we have well over $200,000 in taxes saved. When we compare our Roth IRA environment to our taxable environment, we have $516,000 in savings. So just to make sure everybody is on the same page in terms of tax deferred versus tax-free Roth, this is a representation of that. And just remember, compounding interest in the absence of taxation and how powerful that can be and why we want to keep money in the retirement plan and keep it growing. All right, this is the best point for me to pause for a moment and mention our standard disclaimer, as we always need to make sure we do this. This is for educational purposes only. I'm not here to give any tax, legal, or financial advice. I do and will quote the tax code or various IRS publications like IRS Publication 590, but in no way, shape, or form am I serving as your attorney, your CPA, or other legal counsel. So we encourage you to do your own education and get your own information. I will say that we do a lot of education, a lot of information for our clients. In fact, we have what we call our self-directed IRA transaction handbook that I mentioned at the very beginning that we'll be giving away to everyone. All right. Just by way of introduction, again, I'm John Bowens. I'm the Director of Education and leader of our Investor Success Team. And so what I do with the organization is provide education, information to our clients. Because going back to what I mentioned before at the very beginning, the biggest problem that I saw 15 years ago when I entered the industry is people would have self-directed IRAs and they wouldn't fully maximize the investment potential of those accounts. Equity Trust Company, we've been doing this since 1974. We have nearly $40 billion in assets under custody and administration. And this is what we focus and specialize on, in is helping investors use their self-directed IRAs, 401ks, and other retirement plans to invest primarily in real estate. But we do have investors that invest in other types of alternative assets like gold and silver, or private equity, hedge funds, real estate private equity, real estate crowdfunding, and other types of investments. Okay, I put this slide up and we're just going to pause on this for a moment. Self-directed IRAs, you will learn, are not favorable by everyone. So there are some naysayers that you will come across that will tell you that you can't self-direct an IRA or a 401k or other retirement plan. Has anyone heard this before? Okay. Does anyone want to just say out loud who you think the top two biggest naysayers are on self-direct? stockbrokers, financial advisors, right? Now, if you're a financial advisor, please forgive me. I by no way, shape, or form am I making any negative comments about that profession. There are a lot of great financial advisors out there. There's a good place and a good time for a financial advisor. But for the folks that I work with and myself, I want to manage my own money, right? Why would I want to pay someone to manage my money for me when I can manage my money myself? And most importantly, I can put my money in real estate instead of putting it in the traditional financial markets, which we know what has happened in the traditional financial markets over the last 6 months, really over the last year. The market's down 20% year to date, right? Actually, I think it's like 21%. So we have the ability to self-manage our money. A financial advisor likely doesn't have the incentive to allow you to invest in real estate. So when you go to a financial advisor, what do you think they're going to tell you?
Can't do it.
They're going to tell you you can't do it, it's illegal, there's too many rules, you're going to make a mistake and go to jail, right? Maybe they don't say go to jail, I just use that because it was brought up in the introduction, right? But they're not getting paid on this, so you have to understand this. If you do have somebody that is a naysayer, we can just go directly to the IRS website, irs.gov. This is directly from the IRS website, irs.gov. If you want to go there yourself, in the search box, just put Real Estate IRA FAQ. Real Estate IRA FAQ, if you want to write that down. And you'll see in black and white, directly from the IRS, it says, IRA trustees are permitted to impose additional restrictions on investments. For example, because of administrative burdens, many IRA trustees do not permit IRA owners to invest IRA funds in real estate. IRA law does not prohibit investing in real estate, but trustees are not required to offer real estate as an option. So it's not a matter of legality, but rather a matter of choice. So financial advisors, what do they sell? Right, they sell traditional assets. That's why oftentimes we find they can be naysayers with respect to self-directing into real estate. So you got to be careful about this. And if you're out looking to raise capital or partner with other investors, who's looking to partner with other IRA, other self-directed IRA investors, right? This is an obstacle that you're going to have to overcome, because most of the folks you're going to be talking to are going to have a financial advisor. And you know what? They look at that person as an advisor. Imagine if we changed the name of that profession to financial salesperson, right? That's what they're doing, right? They're selling a financial product. They're selling stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, traditional asset-based portfolios, stock market-based portfolios. Can they sell you real estate? Can they help you invest in real estate? No, they can't do that. So why in the world does this country call them financial advisors? Why don't we just call them what they are, which is financial salespersons? I don't understand it. You guys with me on that? So when you're talking to a prospective investor and you're trying to raise some capital and they say, well, yeah, I need to talk to my financial advisor first. Say, okay, I completely understand that. I appreciate that. Would it be okay if we schedule a meeting with you, I, and your financial salesperson? You see what I did there? Your financial salesperson. And maybe we can have a more in-depth conversation about your real financial goals here. Okay, so that's just a quick tip for anybody out there that's looking to raise capital. Alrighty, so there's these different types of accounts. There's 7 self-directed accounts that you can utilize. Now, I'm not going to spend any more time drilling down into all the different types of accounts. I do have a lunch session from 12:30 to 1:30 if you want to attend, 12:30 to 1:30. I'm not sure what room it's in, but you should be able to find it. It's in here. Okay. If you want me to drill down into the different types of accounts, just attend our lunch session from 12:30 to 1:30. Okay? But what I want to drill down into now, so everybody knows, is how much can you actually contribute to these self-directed IRAs, particularly a traditional IRA or Roth IRA? So here's how it works. You're only allowed to contribute so much to an IRA. If you're somebody that's trying to play catch up, here's how much you can contribute. In 2022, you can contribute up to $6,000 when you're under 50. When you're 50 and over, you can contribute up to $7,000. 2023, those limits are going to increase by $500. So when you're under the age of 50, you can put up to $6,500. When you're 50 and over, you can put up to $7,500. Now we are, call it 60 days away from the end of the year. So what does that mean? You make your maximum contribution now, and then you make your maximum contribution in 2023. Kent, who's in the back of the room, what date are you putting your 2023 contribution into your account?
By about the 3rd of January.
So if you couldn't tell already, Kent is very, very close to retirement, probably should have retired already. Okay? So Kent and I have worked together for 11 years, by the way, if you haven't seen. He's a real tall guy, I'm a real short guy. So anyways, Kent is trying to get as much money into his IRAs right now before he retires. Why? When he retires, he's not going to have any earned income anymore. Okay? So he needs to, unless he wants to go out and become a Walmart greeter or an Uber driver, and I don't think he wants to do that. So what Kent is doing is he's getting as much money into his IRAs as he can while he can. So at the turn of the year, he'll put another $7,500 in, and then he'll have a total of $14,500. So the long and short of it is, if you're under the age of 50, between now and January 1 of next year, you can get up to $12,500 into a traditional or Roth IRA. Then on top of that, you can have your spouse, if you have a spouse, your spouse can make their maximum contribution even if they don't have earned income. One of the biggest myths that I hear in the industry is, oh, I'm working but my spouse is not, therefore my spouse can't have an IRA because they don't have any earned income. There's something called a spousal IRA contribution. Just go to IRS Publication 590, you'll see it. It says it right in the table of contents, spousal contribution. And what it allows you to do is contribute for your spouse with your earned income, assuming that you are married filing jointly. You do have to be married filing jointly. So combined, if you're under the age of 50, between now and next year, you can get a total combined amount for a contribution up to $25,000. If you're over the age of 50, you can get up to $29,000. Now let me pause for a moment. This is strictly how much money you take out of pocket and contribute to an IRA. This is irrespective of earnings, rollovers, and transfers. Which means if you have a 401k and you roll that money over, in addition to that, as long as you have earned income, you can make your contribution. You have to have earned income, meaning income that you're paying federal, state if applicable, local, and then of course your payroll taxes, your Medicare and Social Security. That's the price to pay to get in the game. Additionally, there are what are called modified adjusted gross income limits. So who has been told or has heard that, oh, not everybody can contribute to a Roth IRA because they make too much money, right? These are called MAGI limits, modified adjusted gross income. Good news is, what you're going to want to write down if you fall into this category, is backdoor Roth contribution. Backdoor Roth contribution. This didn't come about until 2010. The legislation changed in 2010, which allowed all income earners to convert money from a traditional to a Roth, hence opening up this backdoor technique. If you're a single individual and you make over $129,000, you're not going to be able to make a full contribution to a Roth IRA. If you're married filing jointly, you make over $204,000, you're not going to be able to make a max contribution to a Roth IRA. That's okay if you fall into that category. Because what we will do for you, and we can do this for you today, for example, so May, who's in the very back of the room, May, can you raise your hand? Everybody say hi to May. So May is an account executive, and she does this every day for Equity Trust clients. She opens up a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA at the same time. You make your contribution to the traditional, and then you immediately convert it over to a Roth IRA. You're not being double taxed. You're going into the traditional, recognizing a deduction, and then you're flipping it over to the Roth, and now you have after-tax dollars in that account. Additionally, if you have tax-deferred money in a traditional IRA or old employer 401k, you can roll the money over, and then you can convert it to a Roth IRA. So whether you have earned income or not, you may still be able to contribute to a Roth IRA. You may just have to go about it a little different way. Funding self-directed IRAs are very easy and simple. You open the account, and then you move your money in. And there's four methods to fund your account. A rollover from an employer plan, like a 401k, 403b, profit sharing plan. If you're still working for the employer that is offering this plan, you might not be able to roll the money over. There are some options of what is known as an in-service withdrawal. You want to write that term down, in-service withdrawal, which says that while you're still working, you can roll the money over into an IRA. When you move money from one account to another, there are no taxes or penalties. I want to make sure we're very clear on that. That's one of the most common misconceptions in the industry. Perpetuated by who, do you think? Who do you think is going to tell you that when you roll your money over to a self-directed IRA that you're going to be taxed and penalized? Financial salesperson. Got it. Okay. See, I was brainwashed. Academically, I studied finance. I then got into real estate. And I was always taught that you open up IRAs and 401ks, you put money in, and then you invest in mutual funds. Because that's diversification. Not once, I don't know how much money I spent, probably $75,000 in education. That is going to an actual established, you know, as they would call it, you know, not these types of establishments, right? As they would consider more established, right? Spent $75,000 to be told that the only way to invest my retirement dollars was into stocks and mutual funds. Then I came to Equity Trust Company and my mind was blown by how I could go out and use my IRA and do all of these creative types of investments and make way more than the stock market will ever be able to yield me. All right. Yes. Yes. So if I convert money from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, I do have to pay taxes. That's a Roth conversion. So let's say I have $1 million in a traditional IRA and I convert 100,000 of that into the Roth. That 100,000 would be added to my ordinary income and then I would pay taxes accordingly. Okay, that's, you have to pay taxes because you didn't pay taxes before. Alrighty, so if you have an existing IRA or retirement plan, we can help you transfer or roll over those monies into a self-directed IRA. Myself, Kent, and May will be here all weekend. You can come see us. Our booth is in the very front. You can't miss us. We'd be happy to sit down with you and talk you through that process. Okay? All right, now let's jump into these investments, all right? This is what we're going to talk about for the remainder of the time. Now that we have the accounts themselves established, all right, now we can go out and start making money with these accounts. So the first is partnering. Who can we partner with? Like we talked about, you can partner with your other IRAs, you could partner with your non-IRA funds, you can partner with other investors. All right, so we're going to start with partnering with ourselves or partnering with our family members. And then we're going to move into partnering with what are referred to as non-disqualified persons. I'll use Peter Fortunato's term and say financial friends. Has anyone heard that term, financial friends? So we can partner with ourselves or our other family members, or we can partner with financial friends. And there's a distinct difference between those two from a potential earnings perspective. All right, so first things first. This is Gary from Cleveland, Ohio. And Gary started his Roth IRA back in 2010 with only $5,000. Not something we're going to focus on here, but one of the ways that he started growing his Roth IRA is through real estate options. Who has done a real estate option? Okay, a few of us. You can do this in your self-directed Roth IRA as long as you follow the rules. So one of Gary's first transactions is he tied up a property with an option, a real estate option, and his option fee was $500. So his Roth IRA invested $500 for the option. The option contract, the optionee was Equity Trust Company custodian for the benefit of his Roth IRA. He then sold the option to an investor buyer and made a $5,000 fee. So he made a $5,000 profit on one transaction tax-free in his Roth IRA. So he grew his Roth IRA from $5,000 to $10,000 on one transaction. And then year two, he did another option deal. Then he got to a point where he had enough cash in his Roth IRA where he was able to partner with his spouse Candace's IRA for a fix and flip transaction. Then he built up enough money to be able to do this investment. So this property that he bought was 41.5. It was a foreclosure. He needed $30,000 in repairs. So he needed about $72,000 all in purchase and rehab, but he didn't have $72,000 in his Roth IRA. So what he did is he partnered his Roth IRA with his non-IRA funds, 75%, 25%. His Roth IRA had 75% equity in the deal. His LLC had 25% equity in the deal. This is actually how you title ownership when you buy properties. Don't worry about writing that down. We give this to you in a template form. Don't feel like you have to go about this all on your own. Now, one technique that a lot of our clients use for privacy or anonymity purposes is instead of using their name, use your IRA account number. It's not a bank account number, it's an IRA account number. Does anyone know that or have used that before? Okay, a few folks. All right, you want to keep your name off public record, that's a great way to do it. So this is how they titled the purchase. This is what was on the deed to the property. At closing, the 41-5 was split 75% the Roth, 25% Gary's LLC. The Roth didn't invest in his LLC. It was a tenants in common partnership. That's really important to understand. So then they had $30,000 worth of repairs. How do you think they paid for the repairs? 75% of the repairs paid from Gary's Roth, and then 25% from his LLC. Equity Trust provides our clients now a prepaid card, like a debit card, so he's able to pay for those expenses using the prepaid card. We also have a digital bill pay system. Think of it like a virtual wallet, a virtual checkbook. So all profits and all expenses, remember, just have to flow proportionately here, 75-25. So it was a fix and flip transaction. They sold the property, 116 on the sale, 10,000 in closing costs. The Roth IRA had $26,000 returned to it, which they paid how much in taxes? 0% because it's in the Roth IRA. Cash profit, $8,600, which was taxable. Right? So what's important to understand, the takeaway here, when you are partnering with certain individuals, you have to make sure that everything flows proportionally. Who are the individuals that you have to look out for? They are what are called disqualified persons. So on your notes, disqualified persons, just draw a line up and down and think of it like this. Anyone up and down the family tree is a disqualified person. And then your spouse and you, and then any businesses like an LLC, corporation, trust that you own and operate. Those are disqualified persons. It's just an extension of you. Okay?
So
those
are not.
Great. I'm glad you brought that up. So sisters, brothers, so people across the family tree, sisters, brothers, cousins, uncles, nieces, nephews are not disqualified persons, which means technically I could make a loan to my brother Robert. Robert could go out and flip a house and pay me back interest and principal. Or maybe I set it up as an equity participation loan that we'll talk about in just a few moments. So just remember, up and down the family tree. Now, what can't I do with these individuals? You can't buy from, sell from, lease from. 4975C1, A through F of the Internal Revenue Code. If you're interested in any light reading, suffering from insomnia, that's where you want to go. That was one of those dry jokes, so when you're on cue, you just laugh at me. All right, we have a good time. All right, so you cannot buy from, sell from, lease from, provide services. To put it into context, if I own a property now, I cannot put it in my IRA. I can't buy it from my IRA. So May gets hundreds of these calls on a weekly basis. I have a property now, and I want to move it into my IRA. You can't do it. There's no way you're going to be able to ever do that. Your IRA money can't lend money to yourself, can't lend money to a child, can't lend money to a parent. Most of those transactions, are you really interested in doing those types of transactions? Right? In most cases, most individuals that I work with are not interested in those types of transactions. We want to make a loan to a third party, right, a financial friend, and generate a substantial profit. All right, so those are disqualified persons. Now, just because you're involved in a transaction with a disqualified person doesn't mean that it's prohibited. Because, see, you have to create a transaction with a disqualified person in order for a prohibited transaction to be created. What happens when you do a prohibited transaction? Your IRA becomes distributed January 1 in the year in which the transaction occurs. So you don't want to engage in a prohibited transaction. The good news is these cases are few and far between. We have a training video that we give to you as a client that walks you through who are disqualified persons, what are prohibited transactions, what are the pitfalls, so that you can steer far clear from the ghosts and goblins on the sidelines. Okay? Yes, sir.
John, in that scenario, that unlikely scenario where you're forced to do a distribution because you violated the rules, if you have multiple accounts, would it just be that account?
Great question. What's your name again? I'm sorry?
Scott,
okay. So what Scott said is, hey, if I had multiple accounts and I did a prohibited transaction in account one, would all my other accounts be distributed? The answer is no. Now, I want to be careful with that, all right? That doesn't mean go set up a bunch of children IRAs and start taking on high risk, okay? But I will say that there are investors that are practicing in the self-directed IRA space that when they do a transaction that's a little bit in the gray area, because there are some gray areas out there that is not an absolute no, but we're not sure of, maybe you set up a separate IRA and you do the transaction in there. So that way, if it does turn out to be prohibited, you're only distributing that IRA and all of the other IRAs are not tainted. Everybody with me on that? Okay, so what that means is everybody has to talk to May and open 10 additional IRAs. No, I'm just kidding. That's not what we're here to do. We're not here to charge you more fees. We're here to help you be successful. Okay, let me move on here because we got some more examples. So just remember, when you're partnering with disqualified persons, everything has to flow proportionally. Okay, just remember that it has to flow proportionally. All right, here's another transaction. This isn't so much a fix and flip, but I like to call this a buy, renovate, not a burr, but a buy, renovate, rent, and sell. In fact, there's no debt on these transactions. This is a property that I bought in March of 2020. It's in Maple Heights, Ohio. We bought it from a wholesaler for $63,000. Here's the problem I had when I bought the property. The opportunity came up, right? And this is how it always works, right? The opportunity comes up. We need to make an offer and close as quickly as possible, and unfortunately, I don't have enough money in my Roth account. Why is that? Well, in many cases, we have other investments in there, right? Other investments that are tied up. I don't have, like everyone else, or I should say, I don't have millions of dollars in Roth IRA. Some people think I do. I don't, unfortunately. Kent has millions of dollars in his Roth IRA. That's why I've named myself the beneficiary of his account. So when he passes away, I get the Roth IRA. All right. So here's what we did. I said, okay, I got enough in my Roth to fund 55% of the deal. And I left some slush fund in that Roth because I didn't want to take all the capital I had in the Roth and then not have enough for my renovations that came up. I anticipated about $15,000 in renovations. I wasn't going to do all the renovations right away. The idea was is do this over a two-year period. So we had 55% of this property bought with the Roth, 35% with my traditional, and then 10% I used non-IRA money. Now, at the very end, I'm going to share with you one regret, all right? So remind me if I forget it. So 55, 35, 10. We bought it for $63,000. No non-recourse loan, no financing. It was a cash deal. We started renting it out. We had two tenants already in place. Now, the problem with this property and why it was such a good opportunity is because there was a lot of deferred maintenance. We bought this from a landlord that unfortunately had neglected the management of the tenants and had neglected the property for about the last 10 years. So you can imagine there was a lot of deferred maintenance and there were tenant issues that we inherited. That's okay. We're okay with that. We know how to deal with that as investors. So we got in. We got the tenants stabilized. We had to evict one. We got another tenant in, both units cash flowing at 750. This is an up and down duplex. So we had 750 coming in on each unit for a total gross rent of 1500. The net operating income, not including the renovations and the improvements, was about 1200 on a monthly basis. So for an investor that were to buy this property, if they went and actually got like a 30-year fixed mortgage, let's say, and they didn't use their IRA to buy the property, their cash on cash return would end up being well over 20%. And so we put $15,000 worth of work into it over time. How did we have to split the $15,000 in renovations and improvements? Proportionally, 55, 35, and 10%. And then all rental income that was flowing back in, because we did have it tenanted while we were doing the renovations, had to flow 55, 35, and 10. All right? We sold the property in May of 2022 for $115,000. Our cash-on-cash return, annualized cash-on-cash return, was 32%. Our self-directed Roth and traditional made $35,000 in profit, and then the remaining profit, the smaller percentage, went back to us personally. So I am going to personally have some capital gains tax on this deal, but only 10% of the income, 10% of the long-term gains, because we personally had 10% in the deal. Our Roth and traditional generated $35,000 in profit. Did we pay any tax on that profit? Did we pay any long-term capital gains? No. Did we have to worry about recaptured depreciation on that portion? No, we didn't. This is important for me to pause on. You are going to be told, I can guarantee you, you are going to be told that it doesn't make sense to own rental properties in a Roth IRA. Who's already heard that, by the way? You're going to hear it. A lot of CPAs, okay, will actually tell people, all right, and let me be careful, because I'll say that there's a lot of CPAs here this weekend that are very passionate about self-directed IRAs, know about self-directed IRAs, all right, and I'm not including the people here in this category, all right? In fact, there's a general, does anyone know Scott, CPA here? He knows a ton about self-directed IRAs. You got to definitely talk to him if you haven't already. All right, knows a lot about self-directed IRAs. So there are CPAs that are self-directed IRA friendly, and then there are CPAs that are not self-directed IRA friendly. You just have to understand that. When you go to most CPAs, what are they going to tell you about owning real estate in an IRA, rental property specifically?
You don't get advantage of all that.
You don't get to depreciate the property, right? Well, remember, the IRA is a tax-exempt entity. Right? So your rental income is coming in and it's tax exempt. Depreciation does what for you? It's a tax break for the taxable income. But because there's no taxable income, you can't write off depreciation. So it's just important to understand the real financials behind this. You're not losing depreciation because what you're gaining is the tax benefits in the IRA and, of course, the ability to use your retirement plan to invest in income-producing real estate instead of investing in the traditional stock market. I can't tell you how many people are calling us now that took a 20% loss in the stock market because 6-7 months ago, they said, well, why in the world would I buy rental properties with my self-directed IRA when I'm doing great in the stock market, right? And I would lose all the depreciation. And now all of a sudden, they're looking at things a little differently, particularly with a Roth IRA. So think about a Roth IRA. When you sell the property, there's no long-term capital gains tax, and there's no recapture depreciation. If we own rental real estate outside of our IRA, all that depreciation accumulates, and when we sell the property, what happens to that depreciation? It recaptures, right? Unless we do like a 1031 exchange, or we die and take advantage of step-up basis. Now, that's not me saying only buy real estate in your IRA, because the reality is we're not going to be able to do that. My wife and I own rental properties outside of our IRA, and we own properties inside of our self-directed IRA. What you have to look out for is when you're looking at real estate transactions, you want to find the deals that make sense for your IRA, and then the ones that don't, you do those deals outside of your IRA. So this property here was a great transaction for our self-directed IRA. We were able to be in and out over 2 years, take advantage of the appreciation, and then we were able to take that tax savings and roll it into our next investment. So our IRAs made $35,000 in profit. We didn't pay any long-term capital gains tax. We actually saved $5,000 in taxes. So then we were able to take that money and roll it into a private money loan. All right, so now that takes us to partnering with a non-disqualified person. So up until now, we've been talking about partnering with disqualified persons. So let's now share with you, what does it look like when you partner with a non-disqualified person? So the real estate joint venture, here's the formula. You put your Roth IRA, maybe your health savings account, maybe your covered education savings account. It, of course, could be a traditional IRA, but why use a traditional IRA when we can get our money into a Roth, get the taxes out of the way now, and make a bunch of tax-free savings? Everybody with me on that? Okay. So we have our IRA. We need a money partner. We need a financial friend. We need a real estate opportunity. And then we get tax-free growth. That's the formula. Pretty simple. The money partner cannot be a disqualified person. All right, it can't be one of those people that's up and down the family tree like we talked about. So let me share with you a real example. Scott and Kate, they're from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Scott had a Roth IRA going back, it's probably 5 years ago. Came to a seminar, opened up a Roth IRA, put some money in it. He was doing real estate, but he didn't know how to use the self-directed Roth IRA. So it sat dormant for about 3 years. He didn't do anything with it. So he called me up because he had this opportunity and he said, John, I'm trying to figure out how to take my $24,000 Roth IRA and put it into a $224,000 transaction. I obviously don't have enough money in the Roth IRA. And I said, okay, well, option A, you could partner with yourself, right? So your Roth IRA puts in $24,000, he puts in $200,000, and then he splits everything proportionally, right? He could do it that way. But he said, John, this is going to be a great investment. Can't I get more of my profit into the Roth IRA? Why can't I take 50% of the profit and put it back into the Roth IRA? We talked about it. Why can't he do that?
It's disqualified.
It's disqualified. It'd be a prohibited transaction. So I said, Scott, do you have any money partners that you know? He said, well, why do you ask me that? I said, because if you have a money partner, a non-disqualified person, then you can work with that individual, negotiate with them, and take whatever percentage of the profits you want, whatever you can agree on with that person. He said, okay, well, let me call you back. So he called me back a few weeks later, and he was at a Real Estate Investor Association meeting, all right, very similar to the group we're in here, and he ran into an investor that he had actually known from years before, and her name is Kate. And Kate had a Roth IRA and a health savings account. And she had a total of about $250,000. And that $250,000 had been just sitting there earning little to no interest for about a year. So do you think Kate is motivated to put that money to use? Absolutely. Do you think that there are folks here this weekend walking around with self-directed IRAs that have money in the accounts and are looking to put those to good use? I can almost guarantee there are. Okay, and that's the power of networking. Now, unfortunately, they're not walking around with a holograph over their head that says, I have a self-directed IRA and the amount of money, right? So that's why you gotta have conversations. Maybe at some point in the future with technology, I'll be able to figure that out. That'd be a good idea for me to create that and then invest with my IRA, right? That was another one of those tangent jokes that I was waiting, it wasn't really a joke, but I was waiting for someone to laugh at me. It just never happened. Okay, so Kate has her Roth IRA and HSA, $200,000 in there, and they create a real estate joint venture. They create a real estate joint venture, and per the real estate joint venture, they're going to split the profits 30-70. But it's not 70% to Kate's Roth and HSA, it's actually 70% back to Scott's Roth IRA. So here's what they did. They used the real estate joint venture agreement. This is a simple 3-4 page document, and we have it in this master self-directed IRA transaction handbook. Everybody is going to get a copy of this for free because you attended today's event. At the very end, I'm going to share with you how do you do that. Okay? You're going to get a copy of this. So you're going to get the actual sample joint venture agreement. And it lists specifically the self-directed IRAs. So Scott and Kate, this was a short-term buy, very little repairs necessary, renovations. They sell it for a $60,000 profit. Scott's Roth IRA makes $42,000 tax-free. So Scott's Roth gets 70% of the net profit. And then Kate, her Roth and HSA made $18,000 tax-free, because the HSA is tax-free as well as the Roth IRA. So Kate is happy. She's a passive money partner. She didn't find the deal. She's happy because she was earning little to no interest, and now she made a 9% return on investment, 18% annualized. Scott grew his Roth IRA from $24,000 to well over $66,000 tax-free on one transaction. So why did this work? This worked because Kate and Scott are not disqualified persons to one another. Last but not least, and this will dovetail into our next segment, why do you think they didn't structure it as a private money loan where Kate loaned her HSA and Roth money to Scott's Roth IRA? Who knows? I know someone knows, because this is a there's some sophisticated investors in here. You bet. When your IRA borrows money, your IRA has to pay tax on a percentage of the profits. It's called unrelated business income tax. So they structured it as a joint venture so that there was no loan against the IRA. All right, I'm going to talk about that in a few moments here when we go into a seller finance transaction. All right, so everybody with me on partnering with disqualified persons and partnering with non-disqualified persons. Partnering with disqualified persons, tenants in common arrangement, everything flows proportionally. Partnering with non-disqualified persons, you buy the property as tenants in common owners, and then you use the real estate joint venture agreement. All right. So now let's talk about private money lending. So the same concept of partnering IRAs on real estate, you can do the same thing with private money lending. Here's a series of loans that I have done with my self-directed accounts. This goes back all the way to 2000. I think the first one there on the left was actually in 2000, maybe 15. But this is a series of just four loans, four examples that I'm going to share with you. And you'll notice here that these loans, they're all short-term loans. Okay, so as private money lenders, my wife and I, we are not making three-year, five-year loans. We're not lending on properties, rental properties. We're lending to investors that are flipping houses. All right, they want to buy and sell. I'm not interested in lending on properties through like a BRRRR type strategy, because what happens if they don't get financing, right? Now I'm holding that note and I can't redeploy my capital. So I want to increase the velocity of my money. I want my money going out and coming back in, going out and coming back in. And I want to do that as much as I can. So on this first loan here, it was a $50,000 loan. I charged 14% per annum. It paid back in 5 months. I made $4,000 in interest profit. That interest, tax exempt because it was in my self-directed accounts, compounding interest in the absence of taxation. Now, if I make a loan with non-IRA money, that interest income is subject to what tax rate? Ordinary income, the highest tax rate, right? It's not subject to long-term capital gains at a lower rate. It's subject to ordinary income tax rates. In my case, it's about 30 cents on every dollar. So if my non-IRA money is making loans, then I'm going to pay 30 cents on every dollar in profit. Because I do this in my self-directed accounts, I don't pay any taxes. So just on this individual transaction, I saved about $1,000 in taxes. All right? Now, these aren't home run deals. I showed you some home run deals, okay? But I also want to share with you the, call it slow and steady runs the race, right? That's actually, as investors myself, I'm always looking for a home run deal. I know it's going to come, but honestly, it's a marathon for me, right? It's not a sprint. For some people, it might be a sprint in here, and that's okay. Everybody's a little different. All right, so this loan here was split up 48% my traditional and 52% my Roth. Why do you think I split it up 48-52?
Because you didn't have enough in your Roth?
Because I wanted my Roth down to the penny. Like, I want those Roth IRA dollars, I cherish so much. I mean, I'll get as creative as I need to get as much money in that Roth into the deal as I can, because that's my tax-free account. Never pay taxes again the rest of my life. So that was a 5248. This second loan here, this is another $50,000 loan to the same rehabber. These were back-to-back loans, 12% per annum, so charged a little bit lower interest rate because they had more equity in this deal. 5-month payback, $3,000 in profit. So that $3,000 in profit, at the closing of the property, I, as the lien holder, interface with the title company. They send me a check for the principal and the interest, and then I deposit that check with Equity Trust, and I split the profits proportionately to the allocation, which is 50-50, or in this one, 48-52. Private lending with a self-directed IRA is incredibly simple. I know, Ed, you had mentioned, I think you've done over 30 transactions, private lending transactions. With Equity Trust, we have an online digital platform that makes it very easy for you. So on these transactions, all I have to do is, while I'm in my pajamas at 10 o'clock at night, because this is when I actually have time to do this type of thing, I go into my online portal at night. That was another one of those terrible jokes. I'm doing really bad with these today. Okay, so I go into the online portal, I upload a copy of my promissory note and a copy of my mortgage. Promissory note and mortgage. I always have that mortgage secured by the property, recorded with the county recorder. I upload my promissory note and mortgage. I upload the wiring instructions. And then Equity Trust, within 24 to 48 hours, will wire transfer funds directly to the title company or the closing attorney. It's as simple as that. It's one of the easiest ways to start self-directing your IRA is through private money lending. Now, I have, which again, everybody's going to get this for free for being here today, I have in the transaction handbook a copy of the promissory note and the mortgage that I use. It's a sample document. So what I'd encourage you to do is you can take this document and you can provide it to your own attorney for review purposes, and then you can execute on these transactions. Okay. Last two, I think you guys get the concept, right? 48, 52, 50, 50%. Hey, you guys didn't remind me of something on that last transaction that I shared with you, the rental property. Remember I said I wanted to share with you guys a regret? Nobody stopped me on that. That's all right. Kent and May, you guys are supposed to stop me too. You guys sleeping back there? Sorry, I'm just kidding. All right, so they hear me all the time, so they're probably bored of me. So that last transaction I shared with you, the rental property investment, I had 10% personally in the deal. And so I had to pay taxes. My wife had her Roth IRA with cash in it at that time. And I was moving so quick on the investment, I didn't think about it. And gosh, I'm kicking myself. Because when I file my tax return next year and I have to report that and I got to pay the tax, I'm going to be even more mad. That's the one thing that I love about self-directed IRA investing is when I do my taxes, I don't have to deal with any of it. It's all tax exempt. I don't have to report any of that income on my 1040. I don't have to file a Schedule E or Schedule C for my IRA. It's all tax exempt in my IRA. It makes my life so much easier. So I do have one single regret on that transaction. It was a great investment, but that single regret is that I should have brought in my wife's Roth IRA. And so everybody can say, John, you know, you're obviously not great at this. You make mistakes, right? We all make mistakes. Right, and that was my big mistake. So you can hold me accountable to that in the future. Alrighty, so last transaction again. I think you guys get the point. This one is actually still outstanding. The property is listed for sale, so we anticipate a payoff anywhere between 60 to 90 days. Yes, ma'am. One quick question. Great question. No UBIT because I'm lending money and I'm generating interest income. So no UBIT because my IRA is the lender. My IRA isn't borrowing money. The only time I have UBIT is when my IRA borrows money, when my IRA has debt against it. Great question. Thank you very much for asking that. All right, equity participation private lending. All right, this one is, I mentioned at the very beginning, one of the most powerful self-directed IRA techniques that you can utilize because you can generate much higher returns than what I showed you on those simple private money loans. So Wayne and Alicia are from New Orleans. And Wayne and Alicia made a $106,000 loan to a rehabber. They funded purchase and rehab of the deal. $106,000. They partnered their Roth IRAs together. So Alicia didn't have enough money in her Roth IRA to do the whole deal. Either did Wayne. So they partnered their Roth IRAs together. $79,500 from Wayne's Roth, and then $26,500 from Alicia's Roth. So it was a 75-25% split. On the promissory note, the equity participation promissory note in mortgage, the lender was listed as Equity Trust Company Custodian, FBO, Wayne's IRA, undivided interest 75%, and Equity Trust Company Custodian, FBO, Alicia's IRA, undivided interest 25%. So 75-25% split. They're husband and wife, so we have to make sure that everything flows
proportionally.
Good. All right, so they negotiated not just interest, but they negotiated 33% share of the profits paid in the form of interest. It's very important that the equity participation loan is drafted appropriately so that it's deemed interest income, which is tax exempt in the self-directed IRA. In this case, the Roth IRAs, which are totally tax-free. The rehabber sold the property and made $114,000 in profit. And per the equity participation loan, they got 33% of the share of that profit. So 33% of $114,000 is $37,620 in profit. So that profit, $37,620, was split 25% into Alicia's Roth and then 75% into Wayne's Roth IRA. This is an equity participation loan. I have a copy that was drafted specifically for self-directed IRAs in the transaction handbook, a copy of an equity participation loan and the secured mortgage. Yes?
Is that in addition to interest, or they just got a participation?
In this one, it was just participation. I've seen it done both ways, where there's interest and participation. I will tell you that I'm hearing a lot of folks speak on making sure that you do have interest and some equity, so that way, optically, it looks like a real structured note. It's not like you just have equity in the deal. So those are some extra details that you'll learn about. Lastly, I will mention that it is my understanding that there are some states, or at least one state that I know of, where you can't do an equity participation loan. I want to say it's in the state of Tennessee, you have to be careful with this. So if you're in the state of Ohio, you're not going to have an issue, but you're going to want to make sure if you're in other states that you talk to a real estate attorney there before you execute on transactions like this. The idea of this handbook is that you have the sample document to start working from, and then you can give that to your attorney, your real estate attorney, and have a conversation with respect to how that's going to work. And feel free to do a conference call with Equity Trust and your attorney. We do this all the time for clients so that we can talk together and make sure the transaction is conducted properly. Alrighty, last but not least, let me check and make sure we're good on time. Okay, good, we got 15 minutes. Yes.
What about usury, like charging loans to other investors?
Okay, so usury. Again, disclaimer, I'm not an attorney, okay? But what I'll tell you is from a personal, practical perspective, we do private money loans, and these are commercial loans. In fact, you'll see on our promissory note in mortgage in here, it says commercial promissory note. We do not loan to owner-occupied or on owner-occupied properties. We don't loan to consumers. We loan to businesses. We loan to LLCs, and there's a manager of that LLC, and that manager or managers are signing a personal guarantee. So that's a key component here with respect to usury laws. But I would check with your real estate attorney in the state that you're operating in to make sure you're doing things compliant. All right, do you guys like this idea of the equity participation private loan, something you guys think you can do, execute on? Okay, does it have to be 25, 75? No, it could be 10%, 90%. And oh, by the way, I haven't even gotten here yet. Your orbit could be much bigger than just my five-planet orbit. My orbit is actually really small compared to some of the investors that I've worked with before. I have a client, his orbit is 20 planets. He has 20 grandchildren, or I'm sorry, his orbit's actually bigger than 20. He has 20 grandchildren. He has 20 Coverdell education savings accounts. And he has conducted private lending where he has all 20 CISA accounts combined in one private money loan. I have another client that has 10 planets in his orbit. Because remember, in an orbit, right, in the universe is always doing what?
Expanding,
right. It's not contracting, so we're always expanding. And so he has 10 planets, 10 different accounts, CISAs, HSAs, Roths, and he made a private money loan on an equity participation basis to a mobile home park operator with all 10 accounts. And then all 10 accounts share in a percentage of the transaction. So you can get really creative. Going back to that first slide with the orbit, you can get very creative in terms of carving up these transactions. All right, last but not least, the IRA borrowing money. IRA borrowing money. When your IRA borrows money, it has to be in the form of a non-recourse loan. So just remember that from the very beginning. A non-recourse loan is what? You can't sign what? A personal guarantee. We do have some national banks that will do non-recourse loans to IRAs, but those are going to be for buy and hold rental properties. And we can talk separately about buy and hold rental property strategies when borrowing non-recourse loans. What I want to share with you here is a smaller dollar investment where we're leveraging the seller to finance the property. When your IRA borrows money, you also have to be aware of unrelated business income tax, also known as unrelated debt financed income tax. What is UBIT or UDFI? This is where when your IRA borrows money, your IRA has to pay tax on a percentage of the profits. That percentage of the profits is dependent on the actual debt finance percentage. So for example, if I bought a property for $100,000 and borrowed $50,000, I'd be at 50% debt, which would mean that 50% of my net profit would be subject to a special tax called unrelated business income tax. Now, don't be fearful of this. Don't be scared of this. Some investors look at it and say, well, wait a second. Isn't the point of using a self-directed IRA to not pay taxes? Well, yes, it is. But sometimes, especially if we have a smaller dollar balance, we need to pay a little bit of tax in order to get there, and that's okay. And that's exactly what Tim did in this example. So let's share what Tim did. Tim had a Roth IRA, and at the time, he only had about $40,000 and some change. And he knew that he needed to take down this deal, rehab it, and sell it. He knew he needed about $86,000 to $87,000. Didn't have the money in his Roth. So what he did is he bought the property for $55,000 with $5,000 down with his Roth IRA, and the seller carried a $50,000 note at 2% with no payments for 3 months. This is a fix and flip transaction. The appraisal came in at $145,000 after rehab. So his Roth IRA bought the property, his Roth IRA, had title to the property, equity trust company, custodian, FBO, Tim's account number, Roth IRA, $5,000 left the Roth IRA for the purchase, and then the Roth IRA had debt against it in the amount of $50,000. So the Roth IRA had to pay back the $50,000 at closing when he sold the property. His repair costs ended up being close to $30,000. This was a, call it 6 month buy, renovate, and sell. He listed it for $139,000 and had a cash offer of $125,000, which he accepted. Here are just some quick before and after pictures. Jump right to the numbers. So always remember, the IRA has to pay for all expenses, right? So if you didn't have money in the IRA, you wouldn't have been able to pay for the expenses. It'd be a prohibited transaction. So you got to make sure all the expenses paid for from the IRA. He used our online bill pay system to process all these payments. When he sold the property, his net profit was $38,938. So after paying off the $50,000 seller note, he had $38,938 in profit. 91% of the property was debt financed. Remember, he put $5,000 down and carried a $50,000 note. The seller carried the $50,000 note. So when you do the math, that's 91% of the property was leveraged. Therefore, 91% of the profits are going to be subject to this special UBIT tax. So he applies the 91%. So now he's got $35,433.58, which is going to be taxable. This full 38,938 goes back to the Roth IRA to start. All right? It's tax-free to start, but then the IRS comes in and says, okay, you got to pay some tax. So we apply our unrelated business income tax rate, which is the estate and trust tax schedule. At this time, the estate and trust tax schedule, at this amount that he made, was 39.6%. It's now 37%. So it can be a high tax rate, but in this example, you'll see, applying the tax rate, he paid $14,000 in taxes, but he made nearly $25,000 tax-free in his Roth IRA. So he was in it for about $36,000 and made $25,000 in profit. What's the cash-on-cash return on investment calculation there? 60-some percent? Is this a good deal still, even though he's paying $14,000 in taxes? Would you guys all agree? So sometimes it does make sense to actually pay this unrelated business income tax. And this is a great example of someone doing that.
I have a question.
Yes.
He had to pay for the rehab, but what about if he did not pay for the rehab through the loan?
So the question is what if his IRA didn't have the money for the rehab? If his IRA didn't have the money for the rehab, the deal would blow up, because he'd have no way to pay for the rehab. And the IRA, when the IRA owns the property, has to pay for the repairs. If I personally came in and tried to pay for repairs, or in this case, Tim, if he tried to personally come in and pay for the repairs, it'd be a prohibited transaction. Okay, so we only have about 5 minutes. I want to make sure I wrap up and we take care of some housekeeping items so that I can get you guys the free transaction handbook and we could talk about next steps. All right, did you guys enjoy this session? Did you get a lot out of it? Yeah, good, okay. All right. So here's the next step. Everybody got one of these folders. Okay, everybody got one of these folders. So I want you to take out the folder. I'm going to walk you through. You didn't get a folder? Here, you can take this one here.
It's
5 minutes? Okay. Oh, I think you have it right there next to you.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right. So everybody take out your folder. In the front right, in the left, you'll see some info about Equity Trust. You notice I didn't make this a big commercial about Equity Trust. If you want to learn more about us as a financial institution, if you want to learn more about how we're structured, domiciled in South Dakota as a non-depository trust company, and all the details about our financial security, just come see us, please. I didn't want to make this session all about that, but rather make it about real practical information that you can use. But if you want to learn more about Equity Trust, you can look at it on this flyer. And then in the right-hand pocket, I want you to pull out, this is an account application. All right. If you want to open a self-directed IRA, I'm going to ask you to start this application. But for those that maybe don't want to open a self-directed IRA, or maybe you're just not ready, that's okay. What I want everybody to do here is in this top box, which is page 1, section 1. All right, so you're going to have to flip. Yeah, there's a staple there. So section 1, okay. I want you to put your name, email, and phone. Name, email, and phone. So everybody put their name, email, and phone. We're going to pass these in just a moment. So name, phone number, and email. Make sure you legibly write your email. Kent, as I mentioned before, is like 2 years away from retiring, so he doesn't see that great sometimes. So he didn't hear me. But we do want to make sure your email is legible, because everybody's going to hand this in, okay? And we are going to email out the transaction handbook, all right? Does everybody want a copy of this? All the sample documents, joint venture agreements, note agreements? Is that a value add for everybody? Okay. This is actually part of one of our courses that we sell for $997. We are not selling that here. We are giving away this transaction handbook to everybody as a gift for those joining OREA and for those that are here at today's event attending this session. Okay? So I need you to put your name, phone, email in the top box there, section 1. If you are interested in opening up a self-directed Roth IRA, maybe you're interested in opening up a Coverdell Education Savings Account, maybe you're interested in opening up an HSA, maybe you want to open a traditional IRA to roll over money and convert money, what I want you to do in the top margin where there's some free space, I just want you to write open account. Open account. So here's what we're going to do this weekend. As a gift to everyone, everybody, whether you're opening an account or not, it doesn't matter. Everybody here is going to get the transaction handbook. Everyone. If you're somebody that says, hey, I'm all in, I want to open these various accounts, I want to start my orbit, I'm going to ask you in the top margin to put open account. This weekend, what we're going to do is a gift for everyone. Number one, there's a $50 setup fee that we charge as a custodian to open up your self-directed IRA. We are going to waive that. So if you spend time with us this weekend to open your account, it only takes about 5 minutes. May, who I introduced before, will be here. I will be here as well. At our exhibit table, you can come see us. We'll walk you through the process. You'll digitally sign your paperwork, so that way you don't have to physically sign anything, and you're done. We'll have your account open by Monday, and then we will help you fund the account in the coming days and weeks. So you don't have to fund your account this weekend. You likely are not going to be able to do that. If you have existing retirement plans, we'll help you move those monies over. So your $50 setup fee is waived. Also, there is an annual maintenance fee that we charge. And because we're at the end of the year, normally we're going to charge clients monthly for November and December and then all of next year. What we're going to do to help you get started is waive your fees between now and the end of the year, and you will only pay a fee for 2023, locking you in at 2022 rates, and you have no fee come due until January of 2024. Depending on the size of your account, that could be savings of anywhere between $100 to potentially $1,000 in fees. All right, so that's what we're doing special this weekend. All you have to do is start the application process and digitally sign with us this weekend, and we'll take care of that for you. So now let's go ahead and everybody pass to the middle. If you could pass to the middle your document, because we are going to raffle off a $100 gift card. So if you could pass in your documents, May and Kent will pick those up. While you're doing that, when you put open an account on your document, feel free to come stop by the exhibit table at any time. However, we will also send you a text message and remind you of this. So if you want to wait for the text message, that's fine, or stop by and we'll take you through the process. We do everything digitally, so that way your information is secured. We are a financial institution. Security of our customer data and information is of the utmost importance. I have an entire 6-hour seminar on information security, by the way. It's between 9 o'clock and 12 o'clock tonight, or 3 o'clock in the morning if I'm doing math properly. That was another one of those awful jokes.
Hey, John.
Marvin.
This is still true. To season an account for a Roth has to be 5 years. If you open it today, between now and the end of your account says year one. Is that still correct?
That's correct. Thank you, Marvin, for bringing it up. So Marvin was saying with a Roth IRA, there's a 5-year seasoning period, which means that the seasoning starts on January 1 in the year in which you make your first dollar contribution to a Roth. The account has to season for 5 years before you can take tax and penalty-free withdrawals. Now, you can invest during those 5 years. That's fine. You should invest. But if you've never had a Roth IRA before in your life and you set up a brand new one today, the seasoning is going to start January 1 of this year, not next year. So for those of you that are 55 or older, you may not be able to take money out of your Roth IRA when you're 59 and a half, where you otherwise could, because you have to wait for 5 years. That's okay, it's just you have to understand that you'd have to wait 5 years. Maybe if you're 60 and you open up your Roth IRA for the very first time, you have to wait till you're 65. But during that period of growth, you can invest, you pull the money out, invest, put it back in, tax-free. You can do all of that. That's the 5-year seasoning period. Lastly, I'll also mention one of the biggest pitfalls, and we're a little bit over time. I know there'll be some people trying to get in this room, so we'll have to stop in just a moment. But any questions that you have, you can come by our exhibitor booth, all right? And we're happy to answer any and all questions you have. One of the biggest pitfalls that I see is if you have an existing IRA or 401k or the retirement plan, and you want to open an account and fund it and get started with a purchase, if you wait too long to open your account, and then you try to fund the account when you finally have an investment in front of you, what do you think is going to happen? You're going to miss out on the deal. You're going to miss out on the deal. And we see this happen every single day at Equity Trust. Remember that if you have an IRA, 401k, or their retirement plan elsewhere, it's not an overnight process to move money from point A to point B. In some cases, it can take 2 to 3 weeks. So you really want to make sure that you have your account set up and funded well in advance. And I'll take a page from Vina's book. She said this one time at a seminar. I heard her mention, you know, I opened up my Roth IRA and HSA and funded it because I knew once I set it up, funded it, that it would give me the psychological motivation to go out and find opportunities. And that's exactly what happened to Scott, and then he stumbled across the joint venture and others that I've worked with. So make sure you don't fall victim to that. All right.
Hey, thank you so much, John.